To another edition of the Red Hot Weekly Daily Fantasy Football Podcast on the IB Sports Podcast Network. I am your host, Keith Fleming. With me, as always, my man giving low-tier plays all over the place, Joe Matz. Joe, it was a big week for us last week.
Yeah, We had the one-off game a bit with the Cincy Chicago, but otherwise we were on fire. As everyone should know by now, we give three plays each, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end, low tier, high tier, and a middle tier. And of our six QBs last week, we had Brady finished third, Russell Wilson was eighth, and my low tier, Teddy Bridgewater, finished 10th.
Such a great call.
Our six running backs, Aaron Jones, I said he was my favorite play of the week.
Man, that was nuts. Devontae Adams owners were probably not as excited as we were.
Well, what was great is if you probably wouldn't do this just because you wouldn't think this is how it would play out. But if you put in Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Jones.
Oh, I know. You would have gone crazy. There's four passing touchdowns, right? Were they all receptions or one of them run?
He threw three to Aaron Jones. Okay, and then Jones also ran in one. I know Matthew Berry's column today, he mentioned a bunch of people sent him in stories about their comebacks. One guy was down 100 points in his fantasy matchup. And he had Rodgers.
Had to have Hawkinson.
Right? Hawkinson, and I'm blanking on who the fourth guy was. But he came back from down 100 to win his matchup. So Aaron Jones was great. Thank you to Aaron Jones. Najee Harris finished a solid ninth. Damian Harris was 17th. Wide receivers, including the flexes, some big weeks. You were all over Cooper Kupp and
rightfully so. In fairness,
we were. Yeah, we're all in on Cooper Kupp right now. And why wouldn't you be?
First, have been from the beginning of the year. We mentioned him on the preview podcast. I mean,
We believed in the Rams.
Exceeded our expectations, though. I think it's safe to say that.
Cooper Kupp, for sure. Keenan Allen, solid 20th. T. Higgins.
That's a great play.
Revive himself at the end there. Finished 24th, which is pretty good for our low tier. And then Hopkins was 27th. And then,
Woo!
Well, don't forget, what's his name? The Raiders guy.
Oh, Hunter Renfro.
Hunter Renfro. I don't know. He didn't rank that high, but he got double-digit points, and I believe he was the bare minimum payment for wide receivers. So that was a great call by you. Tight ends, TJ Hockenson continues to deliver, second overall.
Man, we're killing it on tight ends this year. That was not the case last year.
Yeah, absolute reverse of last year. And Noah Fant, solid seventh. Good pairing with him and Teddy. And then on defense, I said New England, Denver, rookie QBs. Give me those guys.
You didn't even really have to give that much information.
Yeah. Second, New England. Denver was eighth. I also mentioned, I wish I'd really just hammered this home because I said the Saints and the Panthers. I thought the Panthers were going to win that game. And so I should have just said, don't even bother with the Saints. Just go with the Panthers. And they finished.
I didn't know. The Saints were much more expensive, so I went with the Panthers.
Yeah, I don't think I had the Saints in any of mine. I had the Panthers in like half my plays, and they came through giving up 138 yards. So some really money plays by us last week, and we're hoping to carry it over this week.
Money plays for us, and also I want to give a shout-out to a couple of our loyal listeners who had great weeks playing our plays. My buddy Zach Cope just killed it. He won two different little small pools. One was out of 20 players. He also won the IB Sports pool as well. So good on you, Zach. And what made me feel any better was the only players that he did not get from our picks were Brandon Cooks, which was a great call by him. Yep. And then I think he went with the Saints defense. So technically, I guess that was our play. Maybe I forgot about to mention that. So my bad, Zach. And then also my man Dalton Collins, who is, again, somebody who's really we appreciate, you know, pumping our plays, telling people, you know, you can win money by just listening to these guys. He had a really good week last week. So it always makes me happy to see that. So before we get into our plays this week, Joe, last year we really found, honestly, our stride at the end of the season realizing, okay, it's not just about picking the offensive guys, but it's about what are the terrible defenses? Like, let's take on the weakness. And there's, I spent about an hour doing some research, and we're going to continue to do this throughout the year just so teams can kind of know, like, or people can know what teams you can pick on. So there's a few in this first class that I'll give them a pass. Like, the Cowboys are horrendous across the board and pass. You play Herbert and Mahomes, okay. I mean, that happens. We'll see what happens moving forward. If the trend continues, you have, you know, obviously quarterback, receiver, use them. The Seahawks defense is really bad. I will say they played two good offenses. So maybe it's a deal where, you know, they just were at the wrong place at the wrong time. They're not giving up a lot of points, though, because they have the best red zone percentage in the NFL. So they've gotten teams going in the red zone left and right, but they're either holding a field goal or a turnover on downs. Tampa is still extremely suspect against the pass. They're great against the run. It's not really surprising, though, when you get these shootouts like they have been. I mean, you know, teams are going to come back. It's just natural.
When teams throw 50 passes against you.
I mean, the Falcons were a prime example of that. Honestly, like, the Falcons were prime. That game was over. They made a comeback, cut a three, and then the Bucs put it away. And the other is the Packers, who they maybe should be in this bottom list because they played the Saints and the Lions. Definitely not offensive juggernauts. They're 29th in rushing yards, 27th in red zone touchdowns, and 28th in red zone touchdown percentage. I definitely am now seeking for the next couple of weeks until it changes running backs against the Packers for sure. But yes. Then there is, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 defenses that I consider the poo-poo defenses right now in the NFL. It's a poo-poo platter, and you should be doing a buffet on these teams. Unfortunately, the first two are our teams, Joe. We got the Giants, who are 25th in points, 26th in yards, 25th in pass yards, 30th in completions given up, 18th in pass touchdowns, 21st in rushing yards allowed, and 28th in allowing teams in the red zone. My Falcons are even worse. They're 30th in fantasy points allowed, 19th pass yards, 23rd pass completions, last in pass touchdowns given up, 24th in rushing yards allowed, 31st in red zone touchdowns, and 27th in percentage of touchdowns scored in the red zone. You want to maybe get the Falcons a pass with the Bucs, but remember, the Eagles looked awful, awful on offense week two. So they looked like Joe Montana and the 80-49ers against the Falcons. That's not a good sign. But the Jaguars, Lions, Titans, and Vikings are still those teams. Well, the Vikings are new to this team, but the Jaguars, Lions, and Titans, we were picking on last year.
The Vikings pass D is not new to this. I'll tell you
that's
that.
That's fair. But the Vikings overall are just awful now. They're 27 the points allowed, 28th in yard, 26 pass yards, as you said, 22nd pass touchdowns, but they're 21st in rushing yards allowed. The Lions, who, I mean, it's not even fair at this point. 28th in fantasy points allowed, 20th in total yards, 21st in passing yards, 28th in passing touchdowns, 15th in rushing yards, 24th in rushing touchdowns, 27th in red zone stops, and 23rd on first downs allowed and third down conversions. The Titans are 29th in fantasy points allowed, 28th in total points, 28th in passing yards and touchdowns. But this year, they're 24th in rushing touchdowns allowed and 22nd in third down stops. So they're not as good as a run as they were last year. And then my personal favorite, always the Jaguars. They're 32nd in points allowed, 29th in total yards, 27th in passing yards, 25th in rushing yards allowed, 18th and 17th in passing and rushing touchdowns allowed. They've been so bad against both equally that they're not in that bottom tier in either, but they're right on the cusp of the bottom tier at 17 and 18. That shows how bad their defense is. The other thing I want to point out real quick, Joe, is these bad defenses are great to find offensive guys too, because they're going to be down, they're going to be throwing, and you're going to get extra possessions where they're just slinging it in the third and fourth quarter. All right, let's get right into the picks for week three. I feel really good about this week, Joe. I really do. I think I'm kind of surprised by a lot of these.
Don't jinx us here, Keith.
That's fair. Quarterback, I'm doing it again. You went with him week one. I went with him in week two. I'm going back to the well. Until Brady's salary rises or he stops throwing 4 or 5 touchdowns a game, I'm going with him. Like,
no reason to stop.
Right, and there's concern about AB. I'm not concerned. He's still got Gronk, Evans, and Godwin. And I'm telling you, like, Tyler Johnson or somebody will end up having a big game. But Brady is 6,800 at LA. I think this is going to be an absolute shootout. I think having Bucks and Rams is a good thing for you. And I'm just shocked, again, that he's under 7K. He's thrown 9 touchdowns in 2 games. He scored 30-plus points in both starts. And, again, they're throwing it every time they get inside the 5-yard. 5 plays right inside the 5-yard line, they've all been passes. So
and they've
that's
all been touchdowns.
And then the Rams' defense on paper is good against the pass. But let's think about this for a second. They faced Andy Dalton and the Bears and Carson Wentz of the Colts. So before his injury in the fourth quarter, Wentz had 18 points. So you can throw on them. They have not been challenged yet. And I think Ramsey is going to take away Evans. We talked about, I was going to say Godwin or Evans, but Corey made a great point today. It's going to be Evans. Like, it's just Evans is more the kind of receiver he typically guards. He doesn't go into the slot as much. He will, Joe. I asked Corey about that, but he doesn't a lot. So that means probably it's going to be Edwards. That means Godwin and Gronk are going to feast. I'm so upset about AB because AB was my favorite play of any player this week before, obviously, the COVID deal. That doesn't make me feel any worse about Joe. Me and Joe talked about Brady offline this week, and we both believe he is on a mission. He's got that look in his eye that he's going to throw. He's going to break the touchdown record. They're going to try to go undefeated. This is one of the biggest games for them doing that. If you look, if they get by this game, boy, things get interesting. Because I don't think they have another tough game to like week 10.
It's probably the weakest schedule in the NFL.
And remember, it was supposed to be one of the toughest. That's why I always tell people to wait and see what happens because it changes year to year. Yeah, go ahead.
The Panthers might be one of their biggest obstacles.
And they may have just lost McCaffrey.
If they win this game, yeah.
So I just, again, at this price, I can't pass up Brady against any defense. I don't care who it is. You could bring out the 85 Bears. And right now, if Brady's under 7K playing the way he is with all these weapons – sign me up. He's my high-tier guy.
Yeah. like you said, there's absolutely no reason to stop. I'm super happy I drafted Brady kind of on a whim in one of my
same way for me in the one league I have him in. It's just like, well, you know what? He's there. Screw it.
Yeah, it was an auction, and I was like, I'll wait. And then I was like, oh, I can get Tom Brady for $3? Sure.
Hello.
Let's see how that works out.
Oh, please, one more thing real quick. I'm sorry, because the stat blew my mind. How many touchdown passes is he away from throwing more in his 40s than his 20s?
He needs 13 more.
That's outrageous. He's 45 or 44. He's only halfway through his 40s, and he's going to already have more touchdown passes in his 20s. Dude's the GOAT. I mean, I hate Brady for the Falcons Super Bowl. He's the GOAT. He's the freaking GOAT. Go ahead, Joe. I'm sorry.
No, yeah. Hey, Brady praise is always fine by me. As a Giants fan, it does not bother me.
Right,
so
y'all own him.
Feel free. I'm all going even lower than Brady for my high tier. My high tier and my mid tier are $110 apart. I just like them both. And that's it. Although Russell Wilson on the higher end and Lamar Jackson, I think are both pretty good plays this week. But
Kyler
went with
Murray as well, but he's just so expensive.
Kyler Murray obviously is in the point where he's number one or number two every week until he has an off game for me. But yeah, Herbert, 6,500, 2 career games against Kansas City. The first one was his unexpected start after they punctured, Tyrod's lung. And his second, Keenan Allen did not play in the second game. So the first, he wasn't expecting to start. Second, Keenan Allen's not there. He's accounted for 6 total touchdowns in those 2 games. He ran for 2 of them, and he threw for over 300 yards in both games. And while Kansas City has picked off more passes than they've given up, passing touchdowns through 2 games, it's safe to say that's a fluke. Thus far, Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson combined to complete 72% of their passes for over 10 yards an attempt against Kansas City so far. Their defense looks like a mess right now.
Not much been made that they could have lost. You know, everybody said, well, they shouldn't have lost that game against the Ravens. They absolutely should have lost the game against the Browns. So either way, they should be 1-1 right now.
I mean, yeah, the reality is if you're in these tight games, they're pretty much 50-50 for the most part. So they have the record that I think they should have. I'm with you. And there's a number of games that you look at this week. I mean, you mentioned Bucks Rams. I think this is another one where it just looks like a shootout. And so you just want to be in on this game. So
especially because neither one of these teams are going to run the ball a lot, which is what I really like about this matchup particularly.
Yeah, although I'm, as we'll get to later, I'm hoping one of these teams will surprise us a little bit with how much they run, but we'll see. Either way, there's going to be a ton of points. I'm in on it. Justin Herbert shredded them so far. I don't expect it to stop.
Herbert's incredible. I feel like he's been very unlucky thus far to have the points that he does. Because he just hasn't thrown touchdowns like he has.
Last week, every big play they had would get called back for a penalty. So the offensive line.
Two big drops, too. I mean, it's been a little unlucky. All right, so my middle tier guy is your boy, Danny Dimes, who I'm going to tell you, he has looked good. The Giants look awful. I thought he's been pretty good the first 2 weeks.
He's been the best player on the team. Well, him and Sterling Shepard have been the best players on the team.
A lot like my Falcons, which is why this game's so interesting. The O-lines are atrocious, and I mean, it's hard to be successful when you have no time. But Danny Dimes is... That's fair, because we're going to blitz a lot. 5,800 versus Atlanta. The Falcons' secondary is trash. I don't know any other way to say it. We said it earlier. 19th or worse in completions allowed. Pass yards and dead last in touchdowns pass given up. Again, they were gashed by Jalen Hurts through the air, but more importantly on the ground. And he ran for 62 yards. Jones already has over 100 yards in two games. We know he will run the ball. That is something that is really changing him in the last like 10, 12 games. I'd be shocked if he doesn't rush for at least 40 yards. Shocked. I think he's going to get a rushing touchdown. And I think he's going to pass pretty well. 5,800, I think Jones is almost a lot to score 20 points. And at 5,800, you get 20 points. Sign me up. That's my middle tier.
Yeah, I really like Daniel this week. Hopefully that isn't going to just haunt me later.
Well, one of us will be 0-3, buddy. So
yeah, one of us is going to be looking forward to next year already.
I'm already looking forward to next year.
start digging into those scouting reports about.
At least you're in the NFC prospects. East. You know, like the NFC South, it's over.
Yeah, but it also can just give you that illusion of hope.
That's fair.
Which is what last year was. We went 6-10, and if the Eagles had actually tried to win a game, we might have made the playoffs.
That's fair.
Just sad. But my mid-tier, like I said, we got some shootouts coming. Matthew Stafford, 6,400.
Love this play.
In his first two games in L.A., Stafford's efficiency has been off the charts.
Unbelievable.
Five touchdowns to one pick, 70% completion, and a ridiculous 10.7 yards per attempt. Like, the Bears' defense fell apart a little bit at times, and they looked a lot better in week two. But last week, he still was over 9 yards per attempt again, like, against a better defense than the Colts.
Cooper Kupp catching passes for
you. The only thing, I mean, he's had, I believe, both weeks were over 20 points on DraftKings.
Yes,
but one thing that's kind of held him back from the massive game is a lack of dropbacks. He's only thrown 56 passes all season.
Crazy. I would have taken the over on that for the first two games.
Especially if you told me he's thrown for like 580 yards. Like, I'd be like, yeah, for sure. Meanwhile, Bucks opponents, like we mentioned with the Bucks defense, they're giving up a lot of passing yards. It's not because they're terrible against the pass. They're okay. But their opponents have thrown 53 passes per game. So again, Stafford's thrown 56 passes all season in two games. Average Bucks opponent, 53 passes.
Well, in both of these teams, they're great against the run, very suspect against pass.
Yeah, the Bucks, they were like the number one efficiency run defense last year. They're not far off from that this year. I mean, their defensive line.
Hard to run down 14, though, in fairness.
Yeah, exactly. So you've got Vita Vea, which makes it hard enough already to be going up the middle against them ever. And then you've got the most efficient offense. Like we said, they five plays inside the five touchdowns. Tom Brady looks as good as he's ever looked, which is terrifying. And then you also factor in the Rams running back situation where Daryl Henderson might not play. His ribs are banged up. I don't think the game plan against Tom Brady and this Bucks offense is going to be Sony Michel 25 times. So I expect to see a lot of passing in this game from definitely a lot more than we've seen so far. And I'd be putting the over under on Stafford's pass attempts this week, like at 40. So I think you're going to see a big game from him. I don't know if they'll win.
Sony could be better for their offense. I think his style of running actually could open up the pass game a little bit more than Henderson. I know he's not the weapon, obviously, in the passing game that Henderson is, which is surprising because, again, he was a great pass catching back at Georgia. But, yeah. I mean, so, I do think his running style is more tailored to the play action and stuff that they probably want to do against his Tampa defense.
Well, for their sake, I hope it's true.
All right, so my low tier. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
For my sake as a Daryl Henderson owner in a bunch of different leagues, I hope you are way off.
I did it for you, buddy. I can't believe I'm saying this. And I'm saying it with a ton of confidence. Jared Goff is my low-tier quarterback, 5,200 right, versus Baltimore. He's my favorite play quarterback this week. And it's because of the price. Now, let me say that. Because Brady, Herbert, and Stafford, to me, are the three quarterbacks that you can stack with a great wide receiver. You know, with Brady, I'd probably do Gronk. Obviously, with Stafford, you can do Cup, but you can also do Woods. And Herbert, again, you got Allen, Williams. I mean, you could even do Eckler. It's the price. He's 5,200. Now, and I will say, I almost played Fields here. I was so close to doing that. But the big deal is, again, I can get Goff and stack him with Hockenson for $10,400. And you got a guy that has scored 20 points in both games at quarterback and a tight end slash wide receiver that scored 15 points in both games. You're getting that kind of production for that price. Oh my God, that's a dream. Goff has been great. I mean, he really has scored 20 and 32 points in his first two starts. The Ravens are the same defense, and this does not need to be forgotten because everybody will say, oh, Patrick Mahomes, it happens. That's fair. Derek Carr threw for 435 yards on him. Derek Carr did. It's going to force Goff to throw, I think, too, because the Ravens offense is really good. And yeah, the Lions defense, as we talked, is bad. Lamar Jackson is another guy that's just going to feast this week. I think the running back's going to feast this week if Marquise Brown plays. And again, I don't know. The Lions have basically played in two games that they were blown out, and then they scored a good bit of points late. You got to remember that. I know the Niners game ended up being close, but they were down like 24 points in the second half. And obviously the Packers game, the same deal. But their main players, Hockenson, Goff, 8. So Hockenson is only slightly below Kelce and Waller at the tight end position. In their first two games, Kelce and Waller combined for 17 receptions for 214 yards and 2 touchdowns on 27 targets. And again, I love Goff as much as anything because I can pair him with Hockenson. Hockenson's going to smoke this defense. They have nobody to cover. They proved that in week 1 and 2. That's going to make Goff viable. And this is probably the last week that Hockenson is going to be this valuable because Tyrell Williams probably will be back week 4. That'll take away some of the targets. He's not going to continue to get 12 targets a game. He'll get a lot, but not that many. I really do like Jared Goff in that 5,200 range.
Yeah, I think, like you said, I think Jared Goff is going to be our garbage time MVP this year.
Unless Justin Fields' price doesn't go up. Because Fields is interesting enough at that range, too, that with his rushing ability, he's going to be in a lineup for me this week. And I almost had him. I just have more confidence in Goff.
Which is fair, which is actually kind of what happened with me at the wide receiver position, where I thought about Allen Robinson. Because I think the potential is there that this now he's going to just take off and Fields is in there. But at the same time, we might just see Justin Fields run like 16 times. So
if you're going to do that, take Mooney. Like, take Mooney if you're going to do that.
Right.
Mooney
the
received,
risk is
I think,
so much
five
lower
of the 11 passes that Fields threw in the fourth quarter in the game last week. It just, for whatever reason, it seems like he feels a little bit more comfortable in right now. And he's just so much cheaper that you can really build your team up around him.
Yeah. And to that point, Justin Fields is my low tier
quarterback
this
Attaboy.
Week. And this one, short and simple. I mean, obviously, we all know Justin Fields is fast. He ran 10 times last week. Last week, Tyrod Taylor, before he went out with a hamstring issue, 10 for 11, 125 yards and a touchdown, plus a 15-yard touchdown run against the same Browns defense that Justin Fields is going to face on Sunday. So at 5,200, why not roll the dice on Fields? Like, that's just it. If he's good, this is the lowest he's going to be all season.
Oh, by a lot.
And if he's not good, I mean, the thing is, because he runs, I don't see like a situation where you end up with Justin Fields scored 7 points and just murdered your fantasy team. Like, I think he's at least giving you like 14, 15.
His first start is all you need to think about. They scored 17 points. I think Hurst scored like 25 points. They won that game 17-3 because he ran so much.
Like 15 feels like essentially the floor here.
Yep, I completely
agree. That's the floor.
Fun, right?
Yeah, it has to be a true disaster. Like, I remember Johnny Manziel's first start ever. I was in a 2QB league and he lost me my game because he got negative points. But that's on me for trusting Johnny Manziel.
I was going to say, he's a lot more talented than Manziel. Moving on to the running backs. I have one kind of high play and then two sort of lower ones, but I love this play. Austin Eckler, again, we're talking about this Kansas City Chargers game. You see it over and over again. He's 7,200 at Kansas City. I am sure week one, all Eckler owners were going, what the F is going on? He was the lead back, which is great. He saw 15 carries, 57 yards. He had a touchdown on the ground, but he had a goose egg, a donut, and targets. Balls thrown to him, and anybody who knows Eckler is like, what the hell? Well, week two, this new coaching staff realized, wait a minute, we should probably throw the ball to this guy. He did get less rushing attempts than 9, still 3 more than any of the other two backs combined, so it is not a concern that he's not going to be the lead back. He is going to be the lead rushing back, but what I like to see, he had 9 targets. He turned into 9 receptions for 69 yards. And if you take away the exception of week one, which you got to remember, that's a new coaching staff, okay? So that's not the same guys from last year. But if you take game two and then his last 6 games last year and the last 7 games, he's seen 57 targets. That's 8 targets a game. Had 46 receptions. That's over 6 receptions a game. And the Browns backfield just had 5 receptions on 5 targets for 46 yards. They also ran for 116 yards and 3 touchdowns on this defense. So I just think this game's going to be a shootout. The more that the Chargers get down or the more the tempo speeds up, that's great for Eckler. Like, it really is. That's one of the great things about him. He can be effective in a game that's close. But, man, if you get down, we've seen it with Herbert plenty of times. It's like next thing you know, he will throw 5 passes on 1 drive to Eckler. And it'll be like 5 receptions for 20 yards. But that's 7 points on 1 drive. I love Eckler when he's healthy and especially when he's not overpriced. I feel like 7,200 is about perfect for him.
Yeah, I'm with you. We're all in on Eckler, as we have been for quite some time. And then I know that Lombardi, the offensive coordinator, has talked about Eckler being, because he came from the Saints, Lombardi did, talk about Eckler being the Alvin Kamara.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely expect, as you
said. Hopefully not this year's Alvin Kamara, but.
Alvin Kamara when he has a good quarterback.
Fair enough.
So as you said, I think last week is the norm. That I don't know what the heck happened week one with that, but. I love Eckler as well. I'm with you. My guy, I'm rolling the dice. I think he's ready to have his bust out. I'm back game.
I love this play. I'm going to tell you, I love it.
Saquon Barkley, 6,500 against Atlanta. I mean, just think about that. If you think that Saquon Barkley will be healthy again, like this is him like 3 weeks in, he's got the long rest after playing a Thursday night game. If you get a healthy Saquon Barkley at 6,500, it's like, how do you not take that? And all the signs are there. Week one, he only played 48% of the snaps. Week two, which again, short week, 84% of the snaps. Like, he's back to dominating the backfield. He showed the flash with the 41-yard run in the first half. And then you look at the Falcons. Yes, we're only 2 weeks in, so it's a small sample size.
It's not small. It's since we became a franchise, Joe.
But currently giving up the 8th most yards per attempt to running backs and the 8th most targets. So you're thinking about Saquon. If you give him a chance to get the open field at all, whether it's running the ball or getting a reception, that big play is going to come. I expect we're going to see a lot more of him this week. I'm all in on my guy Saquon.
And just to prove your point, it's not like they've had a murder's row of running backs. Ronald Jones and Fournette have not looked good.
No,
that's Miles not, Sanders not is not your traditional bell cow back. And these guys are just thrashing him for yardage. It's not good. That's my only concern with Jones is Barkley could end up having this huge game on the ground and it could end up limiting him. But best case scenario, we know Barkley can catch passes and they both can feast and we're all good.
Like you said, DP is like split. So if you get a leak out with Saquon.
Oh, I'm worried. I'm very worried. I'm worried about Jones running. I'm worried about that. So my mid tiers.
We're both worried.
Oh, we're very worried. Because our teams suck. My middle tier guy is a safe play. And depending on what you're doing with your lineup, I think sometimes these guys are very important. Where James White, 5,900 versus New Orleans, he's got a very high floor. Now, he doesn't have a high ceiling. I think probably the most White's ever scored in a game is probably like 22 points. He's not going to go bananas. But I just don't see any way he doesn't get 8 to 10 points. And in that 5,900 range, it gets kind of tricky. So I wanted to go with Javonte Williams, like full discretion. I think he is the better back. If you look at what Melvin Gordon has done, you take away that 70-yard run, he's averaging like 2.7 yards per carry. I think Denver's going to run the ball. I think Williams is eventually going to be their bell cow. It's just not yet, and he doesn't catch enough passes to me where he could lay an egg. I don't see James White laying an egg. That is exactly why I went with him. In his two games, White scored 12.1 and 18.5 points. I'd take both of those at 5,900 and run to the bank at running back. The big thing, he saw 6 and 7 targets in those two games. He turned the 13 targets and 12 receptions. That's what James White does for 94 yards. And again, remember, they got a rookie quarterback. So he needs that safety valve. He does. The tight ends have not worked out the way that I think that Bill Belichick had planned. And James White has basically become that safety valve. They don't have Julian Edelman. I mean, it's basically James White is there. Okay, we don't have any time. They have a great offensive line, so they can be creative. And then the most important thing, he's already had 3 carries in the red zone through 2 games. If he's going to get part of the carries in the red zone, James White is not only a good play for daily fantasy, he's a good play to pick up in your yearly fantasy league, particularly in PPR leagues. He's averaging 4.5 carries per game. So again, if he gets 10 touches, I trust James White to get me at least 10 to 15 points. Again, I think he can get 10 points on receptions alone. The Saints D is giving up under 3 yards per carry through 2 games. They faced Aaron Jones and McCaffrey. That, again, is very good news for James White because McCaffrey was able to do some damage. He caught 5 balls for 65 yards. He was 2nd on the team in targets in week 1. That's James White. 1st in targets for week 2. And so, I mean, he is a focal point of their passing game right now. I think he's fairly low priced, for a running back with this kind of floor because I really don't see him having a clunker. And I do think that he has the potential to score 15 to 20 points. If he does that at that range, you're in big time business. And we do know James White will occasionally have a 2-3 touchdown game, especially against a team like this where they're really going to struggle running the ball. And the question is, who else are they going to throw it to? I think James White could end up seeing 10, 11 targets. I would not be surprised.
Yeah, like you said, the beauty of this one is it does feel extremely low risk. And then obviously the ceiling is the only thing you're concerned about. But yeah, if those red zone carries continue to happen, he can give you a 20 plus easily. So yeah, I was upset to have him on my bench in a PPR league last week because I did not expect him to be stealing Sony Michel's carries inside the 5.
Joe, we've been so good too with quarterbacks, wide receivers, and tight ends. And I'm pretty much getting to the point where I just want to make sure I don't screw up the running backs. Like, honestly, I just want to make sure I get like 25 points out of my 2 backs without spending a lot of money and then trust with the picks that we're giving to fill in the wide receiver, tight ends, quarterbacks to score all the points.
The way it's been going, that strategy makes a lot of sense. My middle tier, you mentioned him earlier because he's facing the Detroit Lions, and that's Tyson Williams at 5,800. I don't know if people have picked up on this. I have picked the starting running back facing the Detroit Lions defense every week so far. Mostert did not work out, but only because he got hurt.
I was going to say, he would have.
He had 20 yards and two carries before he got hurt. And then Eli Mitchell ran for 100 yards. So in his first game. Obviously, we all know what Aaron Jones did last week. Now it's Tyson's turn. Only the Seahawks have given up more fantasy points to running backs than the Lions, and that's because they just faced Derrick Henry. Tyson, he hasn't seen a ton of carries yet, but he's averaging 6.5 yards per attempt.
Anybody who watched the game against Kansas City, it's not going to be long before he's getting a majority of the snaps and carries.
No. And he's had 5 receptions over the 2 games. He had multiple receptions in both games. So he's getting involved in the pass game. Yeah. And were those first 2 games super tight games, you couldn't just totally go all in on just running it down people's throats. This is the Lions. This isn't the Chiefs. It isn't the surprisingly good Raiders. It's the Detroit Lions. Like you said, the Lions will show up in the fourth quarter and put up like 10, 14 points. But I expect Tyson Williams going to see easily the most usage he's had so far. And his efficiency so far is fantastic. And also, yeah, the Lions suck.
Again, I do like to see the fight, though, that the Lions have this year. They're a different team than they've been in previous years.
They're bad, but they're trying versus the like second half of last year where they were just bad.
It was an awful coaching hire. But we've been picking on the Lions' run defense for going on. I mean, if you count like months, 10 months. I mean, we at the end of the year we
pretty
started
much from like
just the, pounding them.
Yeah, pretty early on last year to now.
It's a great play. My low tier though is probably my favorite back this week. It's not a homer pick. I'm telling you, Cordell Patterson, 4,600. This guy's been really the lone bright spot. Maybe you could say Pitts. He looked pretty good last week for my Falcons through 2 weeks. He saw 9 touches in week 1. If he had not had the fumble, he'd have turned those 9 touches into 10 points. He ended up with like 9.1 points. And then he was rewarded this week because he did. He looked like the most explosive player on our team after week 1 and had a horrible performance by the team. And they rewarded him with 12 touches in week 2. So what did he do? He went off. And they even rewarded him with a couple of red zone rushes, which much like James White, if this guy starts getting touches in the red zone, he is a play every week, especially at $4,600. He had a couple of red zone rushes. He had 6 targets through the air. He had a touchdown on the ground and in the air. All I need to tell you is last week, McKissick, a guy with a fairly similar skill set, but not nearly as athletic and explosive, he had 5 receptions for 83 yards against this same Giants defense. Davis is absolutely still the lead back, but watching both games, and the unfortunate Falcons fan, I have to, Patterson's versatility has really stood out. And it's kind of shocking that it's just now that someone has kind of figured out how to use this guy to help your football team. Because he's a special athlete. I'd be shocked if he doesn't see at least 12 touches this week. I honestly might be shocked if you don't see an uptick in that. Because, you know, he went from 9 to 12. I could see 15 this week. If he gets those, he's going to do well. And, again, it's 4,600. I think he has a high floor, much like James White. I don't see him scoring any less than 8 to 10 points, which we'll take it. 4,600 is not what we want, but we'll take it. But unlike White, he has humongous boom potential because he can take any rush or any pass to the house at any time. Cordell Patterson is my low-tier running back, 4,600 of the Giants.
Obviously, I hope that blows up in your face and it's terrible. I do not expect it to. Say what you want about what the teams look like under Arthur Smith so far. He does seem to be the first person to figure out how to use Cordell Patterson in an offense. So, I'm pretty worried about the freak athletes on your team against my team. We'll see how it goes.
This is another one. Yep.
So my lower tier guy, it's been a pretty massive disappointment so far this season. But I think this is good. Maybe the biggest disappointment in all.
We can't even say this season since he's been drafted and was at the time he was drafted. It's unfair. The Chiefs are now so loaded that they'll never be stopped. And it's like, okay.
I will say I was pretty loudly outspoken that it was a terrible pick. Not because I thought he would be terrible.
You got Patrick Mahomes. How about you protect him?
Protect him or get a defense around him. Either of those.
Great.
They could have just signed James Robinson off the free agent market, but instead they drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Who, in fairness, has averaged 4.5 yards per carry. They don't really use him very much a lot.
Right. Well, usage has been one of the issues. Now, the upside is he's still dominating the snaps in that backfield. There doesn't seem to be a threat to take that from him. But, yeah, he's seeing only like 12 or 13 carries. I think he saw 13 of the 16 total run plays they called last week, which that was a game they were winning most of the time. So, obviously, you know, you can't totally blame Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy for being like, let's just give it to Mahomes every play. But if there's a game to not do that, this is the opportunity. The Chargers D is allowing 5.5 yards per carry so far this season to running backs. And a two-year Austin Eckler pick, only the Chiefs themselves are worse in the yards per carry against running backs. The Chargers are now dead last in rushing yards allowed. Again, we're only 2 weeks in. But this is kind of how Brandon Staley's defense is designed. It's meant
they
to prevent.
They revived Ezekiel Elliott, for God's sakes.
They did. And Tony Pollard continues to be better than him.
Tony Dorsett?
Yeah, exactly. But so this is what Staley's defense is designed to do. It's going to stop the big plays in the passing game. He likes to play two safeties back most of the time. And I don't see why you would go away from that strategy against the Chiefs. Now, obviously, his defense worked better last year when he had Aaron Donald. There's not quite anyone like Donald in the league, let alone on this Chargers team. So if you've got a defense that's going to be all in on trying to prevent the big play, trying to force the Chiefs to run, this is Edwards-Helaire's chance. This is it. This is probably the game where you're going to see him carry it 15-plus times against a defense you can take advantage of. And he's only 4,800.
Crazy.
I'm really curious.
200 more than Cordell Patterson. That's nuts.
Week one, he had to be like 6,000, right?
He was.
Like
he was I like think he was actually 6,200 or 6,300.
Right. So he's dropped 1,500. So if he's going to be a viable fantasy player this season, and if he's going to prevent everyone who drafted him from panicking, this is the week. So am I all in 100%? No. But I still think it's a great offense. He's dominating snaps. It's a weak defense against the run.
You're not going to get that volume at that price. Hardly ever.
No. Right. You don't have any sure things here. And so you're telling me a guy who was a first-round pick is in the best offense, give or take the Bucks, in the NFL against the worst run defense so far this year? I'm going to take it.
I love it. A few things real quickly before we get to the receivers. One, the people hammering Helaire about the fumble. That was his first fumble. In the NFL. So it happens. I mean, it just does. Just like Mahomes threw that terrible, terrible pick, which for whatever reason, people are not talking about as much. The other thing real quickly is that there was a game that reminds me of this against the Buffalo Bills last year. You remember? Supposed to be a shootout. I know the weather played a factor, but Reed went in there and ran it down their throat because I think he knew, okay, this offense actually has the ability to run and gun with us. Let's slow the game down, and I'll take my guy Mahomes and less possessions, you know, against a younger quarterback, Josh Allen. I could see the same thing this week with Justin Herbert. Wide receivers, our favorite thing. This is no shocker. And this is, again, I don't want to jinx it, but you should be taking Cooper Kupp this week. He's my top receiver, 6,800. I do not understand what DraftKings is thinking. Kupp, who me and Joe, again, both had last week, he followed up his huge game, week one, 7 receptions, 10 targets, 108 yards and score, with an even bigger second game. He caught 9 of his 11 targets, 163 yards, 2 scores. He only went up $800. There are 8 guys that are still more expensive at wide receiver than him. He's outscored all of them, and he has more targets than all but one. So you're getting this dude who is the top scoring wide receiver. He's getting as many targets as anybody, and there's 8 guys in front of him. And I mean, it's significantly. It's not like it's a few hundred bucks like Calvin Ridley last year. It's $1,000 difference between like him and DK Metcalf. And then just a reminder, the Bucks, their secondary is still really bad. I was going to say suspect. They're bad, and they're great against the run. They're 30th in pass yards, 36th in pass completions, 28th in first downs given. And again, the big one to me is 27th in third down percentage stops, something where Kupp and Woods are going to feast. If you can't get off the field on third down, those are not the two receivers you want to face, because they're both very good at running both, obviously, down the field routes, but also those short, get a first down, kind of like Kansas City with Hill and Kelsey, that can do both as well. And then one more thing, and this should not be forgotten. The Bucs basically said, okay, we're going to bring everything back. Their defense is almost identical to the defense that we saw second half of the season, through the playoffs, won the Super Bowl. In week 11 last year, with Jared Goff, Kupp caught 11 balls for 145 yards. Oh, by the way, Woods in the same game caught 12 balls for 130 yards and a touchdown. Play Kupp this week. I'm not going to be mad if you play Woods. Honestly, that game and the Tampa, or if you're going to go with Brady or if you're going to go with Stafford, I'm not mad at you taking two receivers. If you wanted to take, say, Woods and Kupp or Woods and Higbee, or Kupp and Higbee, or you want to take Gronk, and I would just take Gronk and Goblin, because with Evans on Ramsey, I don't mess with Ramsey. I've learned my lesson.
Yeah,
but I actually think that the offense is good enough, and both of these teams are going to throw. But Cooper Kupp at 6,800, I know people are going to say, well, everybody's going to have him in their lineup. So what? If he's going to score a bunch of points, I don't care. I'm going to have him in my lineup.
Yeah, it's like, sure, you obviously need to find people who aren't in everyone's lineup. But it's like last week, if you played a Sunday game and someone had Derrick Henry, you were fucked because you didn't have Derrick Henry. If you did a Sunday, Monday,
Aaron Jones on Monday.
Right. I went from like 15th to first in one of my pools because I had Aaron Jones and TJ Hockenson. Doesn't matter if a bunch of other people did. Like, you need those guys.
It's usually the stars that make the difference anyway. It's like what I tell people, it's what I'm most proud about on this podcast. We do very well with the low-tier plays. Those are the guys that usually end up making the biggest difference.
Because, I mean, yeah, with the stars, you're just trying to find the star you feel most confident in.
Yep.
And there probably will be a lot of other people who also do that.
Yep.
So, don't overthink it and be like, I'm going against the grain and I'm, you know, picking someone who's not Cooper Kupp, because I feel almost silly because my high-tier guy, I would say he's like a toss-up for me between him and Kupp, and he's at 7,400.
Right.
So I would take Kupp first, but if you want to do Kupp and Tyler Lockett, hey, I'm there for it, because Tyler Lockett has been the other guy who's just been absolutely insane this season. He's hit at least 29 points both weeks, 12 receptions for 278 yards.
That's what's insane.
Three
That's
scores.
Unbelievable. I didn't realize he hasn't had that many targets and he hadn't had that many receptions for what he's putting out.
Right. It's like 12 receptions, 16 targets. Those are good numbers, but for 278 yards, it's insane. Now, can he keep that pace the whole season? Obviously not. It's not going to happen. There are going to be weeks where DK Metcalf's the main guy too, but there's a lot of reason to think he can keep it up against this Minnesota Vikings team. Only the Titans and Bucks have given up more fantasy points. And while DK is going to primarily see Patrick Peterson, who's still competent, if I wouldn't downgrade DK. Like, DK is a solid play this week. But while he's seeing Peterson, Lockett's got either Bashaud Breeland, who's currently the 103rd out of 103 ranked cornerbacks on PFF. Mackenzie Alexander in the slot is the 95th ranked cornerback on PFF. Or you get Cameron Dantzler, who's probably their best option, but he played so poorly in the preseason that he got benched for Breeland. So I'm feeling really good about Tyler Lockett scoring big points again this week. And also, I think Minnesota is going to put up enough points to where they'll have to continue to pass, because Minnesota's passing game has been pretty good this year. So I think there's going to continue to be at least solid volume, and Lockett's got a really good chance to beat these corners over the top yet again for some huge plays.
And a dome, too. And,
yeah.
You know, I had a rule last year. Remember it, Joe? I'm not taking Lockett or Metcalf, because it seems like no matter which one you pick, the other one goes off. Something's changed this year, and it doesn't surprise me that Lockett's the one that's consistently balling out right now. you know, Wilson really wanted an offense like Sean McVay. So what'd they do? They went out and got a coordinator from his coaching tree. And guess what? They're not running it 35 times a game and running it on first down and running it always on third and short. And Wilson looks great. And I think that's why I think Lockett's going to continue to be fantastic. And for those Metcalf owners, don't worry about it. His time's coming because as Lockett continues to ball,
don't panic.
They're gonna move that attention. And when they do, Metcalf is the kind of guy that, I mean, 80 yards on any play is not a difficult thing. So I love that play. My middle tier guy is who was my middle tier guy? Oh, that's right. It's your boy Sterling Shepard, Joe.
Let's go. He is
5,900 versus Atlanta. If you notice, the Giants and the Falcons defense suck. I'm going to the well over and over again. Shepard's been incredible through 2 weeks. There's no other way to say it. Week one against, let's be honest, a good Denver D caught 7 passes on 9 targets, 113 yards and a touchdown. Last week versus Washington, which I don't know if they're a great defense, but he caught 9 of 10 targets for 94 yards. He's averaging almost 23 points per game. He scored at least 17 in both weeks. And again, he gets an awful Falcons D, particularly secondary. Week one, Devontae Smith, Jalen Reagor, and Dallas Goedert combined for 16 catches for 162 yards and 3 scores. Do you know what those guys did in week two? They had 6 catches for 45 yards and 0 scores. You want to know what the difference between week one and week two? They weren't playing the Falcons. I think Jones, like Hurts, looks much better versus this Falcons defense. And Shepard is the clear number one target. I've asked Joe because I've been hammering him because I know a receiver is going to go bananas. And he said, "Keith, just look at the data. It tells you Shepard's the number one target. I'm going to take probably the number one target versus the Falcons every week." I mean, it's something that's not going to get better in the interim. Sterling Shepard, 5,900, I think is a great play.
And then, like you said, again, Dean Pease loves to blitz. Who are you going to go to when you get blitzed? The guy you trust the most. That's very clearly him right now. So I love it. I think that's a great call.
I hope it blows up in your face.
Yeah, exactly.
Or my face. Wait a minute, what are we doing here?
And then again, I'm just loving some of these games as just like shootouts. So let's ride. Robert Woods, 5,700. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's been a little bit of a disappointment this year, but he still reached double digits in both games. Despite, again, the lack of passing attempts.
I was going to say, what'd you talk about? Then throwing it was supposed
to be called. Yep. Yeah, you got Cooper Kupp going off. You got not a lot of passes going around. He's still getting your double digits. He saw 9 targets on only 30 attempts last week. And then, like you said, last year, 12 for 130 and a touchdown on 15 targets against the Bucks. I expect Stafford's going to have to throw it at least 40 times. If he throws it 40 times, Robert Woods is definitely seeing double-digit targets. And if that happens, I expect to get a really good payoff on my investment of only 5,700. That's not a whole lot. So like you said, take your pick. Like, get Stafford and Kupp. Get Stafford plus Kupp and Woods. Stafford, Kupp, and Higbee. I wouldn't do every single fucking guy in the offense.
Oh, no. I'm talking about I'd take 2 of them and Stafford.
Yeah.
Like, I would not be afraid to do that.
If you want to throw 2 of them in there, feel free. Like,
especially with Higbee, who I think is due too. I mean, let's not forget that that's also a defense that's awful against the tight ends as well. And again, I think the main thing, they're going to have to throw more, which again, it's shocking. We were talking about 50, 60 passes a game. He hadn't thrown over 30 yet. It's been so efficient, which I don't know if they can keep that pace up. So let's look for a shootout. So my final wide receiver and my bargain one. Now, he does have a questionable tag, so please pay attention to that. It's T. Higgins, our boy. Man, we've been banging at T. Higgins for a while. 5,100, and again, it's another one that's hard to understand. In week one, a game, remember, that the Bengals led most of. They ran the ball a ton. He turned 5 targets into 4 receptions, 58 yards and a touchdown. Week two, where they trailed a majority of the game, he saw 10 targets, 6 receptions, 60 yards, and another score. I spoke in week one when I selected him how in 10 career games with Burrow, he's averaged just over 14 points per game. Well, he's averaging 16.4 points per game this year. So now we're getting to a big sample size here. 12 games, and this guy is just very consistent. Now, granted, He doesn't have these big explosion games. He hadn't had, I don't think he's had a game yet with Burrow more than 25 points, but it makes it even more impressive that he's averaging 15 points per game over 12 games. He's just super consistent. At this price, that's what you want. I mean, 5,100, you get 15 points. You are running to the bank with that. The Steelers have given up the 21st most fantasy points to opposing players and have been particularly weak against the pass, 29th in passing yards, 28th in completions. They have a great red zone defense that has prevented the defense from giving up a lot of points, but it's allowed receivers to do very well against them. Three Raiders receivers scored in double figures in week two. Week one saw two Bills wide receivers score 14 or more points. At this price, Higgins should easily get the points desired. Now, again, that 10 to 15 point at that price tag of 5,100. But he does have a case to have a boom game. Please do follow him, though, because he was a late add. I think it was on Wednesday or Tuesday to the injury report. It looks like he's going to play, but he hasn't practiced. So do pay attention to that. But if he does, I love T. Higgins. Low tier play.
Yeah. T. Higgins, one of the official wide receivers of the weekly daily fantasy.
That is absolutely true.
He's our Deontay Johnson of this year. We're just.
Yeah, that's fair.
We said to pick a different AFC North receiver every season.
And Deontay paid off a lot early last year. I mean, a lot.
And as long as he's healthy, he continues to pay off. We kept saying he's the number one receiver in this offense. We were right. My low tier guy, I went real low, and I'm honestly shocked that this guy was this low. Like, credit to whoever writes one of the articles on ESPN, credit to this guy for having KJ Osborne on one of his lists, because I would have never even thought to have scrolled down that far to 3,500. But because, and it doesn't make any sense to me. He has 15 targets. Adam Thielen has 17. Justin Jefferson has 19. Those guys are obviously, they're the one and two. There's no question there. He's not going to like be equal to them like all the time, but he's not that far off. In both games, he's had at least 5 receptions, at least 6 targets, and at least 76 yards. His lowest scoring game is 14.6. I expect Cousins to have to fling it to try to keep up with Russell Wilson, because, like I said, I do not see any way the Minnesota Vikings defense slows down Seattle. So that means Osborne's going to be involved. He's going to be out there, and so he should be productive. And I mean, again, this is a guy who has given you basically rounding like 15 and 20 points the first 2 weeks, and he's 3,500. If he gives me 15 at 3,500, I'm thrilled. The fact that there's a reasonable chance he could score in the 20s is insane. KJ Osborne is going to probably be like every lineup I have, just because he's going to free me up to do whatever I want in other spots.
I love it. And again, if he gets 10 points, it's great. I mean, yeah. At that price, that's how you do it. Real quickly, because I read this while you were talking about it. In July, the Vikings said that they loved what they see and KJ Osborne all during the spring, and that with the second year with the team, he's apparently someone who performs so well, they expect him to have a breakout season. As a rookie last year, he didn't play a single offensive snap for the team. He was primarily on special teams, but they said that he's just been too good and he has earned playing time. So I always love to see that it was there. You know what I mean? Like, it was there that they were going to use him. And let's be honest, you got 3 receiving options and a running back. As long as Kirk Cousins isn't on primetime, that's going to be a really good offense. Moving on to the tight ends, which we've been on fire. This is a duh. TJ Hockenson, 5,200 versus Baltimore. He's averaging more points than Waller. He's $2,400 less. He's averaging just 3 points less than Kelsey. He's $3,000 less. He has a better matchup than both. Gronk is also off to a great start, but he's 300 more despite only scoring 1 more point per game. Gronk has 4 touchdowns. Hockenson has 1. Unlike Gronk and Kelsey, Hockenson is not challenged at all by elite receiving options on his own team. Baltimore has faced, again, the best 2 tight ends in the league. They've been torched. I told you that earlier. He is averaging 10 targets per game. That will continue until Williams comes back. who's their really their one legit wide receiver that they have that's a true number one type receiver, he is their number one receiver. I mean, he's still going to probably be their number one receiver. I'm just saying he's getting all of them targets. I mean, because it's just the only one Goff looks really comfortable with. Again, don't overthink it. 5,200, he should be in every single lineup. Every single one. Baltimore's been just thrashed by Waller and Kelsey. I expect Hockenson to continue that trend.
Yeah, he's my guy too. I just don't see, like, if you're going for – if you're not trying to go cheap at tight end, I just don't see a better option.
I think you should go like, cheap at wide receiver before you try to go cheap at tight end because he's like, that good at 5,200.
Yeah, that's like – obviously, if you could have Travis Kelce, you'd have him every week. But he's priced at a reasonable rate where you're like, oh, he's like a number one wide receiver. Like, again, Hockenson's like 5,200. Like,
that's the T. Higgins range we were just talking about.
Right. And we're happy that
T. Higgins is going to score 12 points. I'm shocked if Hockenson doesn't score 15 to 20.
Yeah. T's competing with Jamar Chase and Tyler Boyd and the offensive line letting Joe Burrow get murdered. Hockenson is in an offense that has to fling it all the time.
And their offensive line is really good. Sewell,
yeah,
and by the way,
line is not terrible. Oh, yeah.
Back about, like, this kid's going to be like Hall of Famer. I'm going to tell you right now. He's unbelievable.
Awesome.
Anything else on Hockenson or just playing?
Yeah, I mean, the Ravens are, though, a good example. I think this is something to remember going into next month because they play Hockenson this week, Noah Fant next week, and they're coming off of Travis Kelce and Darren Waller.
So bad. That's a brutal start.
So they're dead last, like, easily if you look at like every tight end metric defensively. And I think that's good news for Hockenson because he's not far, like, he's maybe in that tier, or at least not far off of that, the best tier. So he should do fine. But like when they're up against Jack Doyle,
right,
don't be like,
take it
this is his
salt.
Week.
Yep.
He's going to go off or, hey, yep. CJ Uzomah, this is a sleeper pick. No, because the Ravens are facing all the best tight ends in the first month. So I'm all in on Hockenson now. But that's just a reminder that when you look at some of these rankings, like, yeah, if it's the Lions, they sucked last year. There's no reason to think the first 2 weeks are a fluke. If you're looking at a good defense like the Ravens, double check why they're so bad in something before you go in on someone.
Completely agree. Tyler Higbee is my middle tier tight end, Tampa 4,000. I know you're going, Keith, really? I mean, is this deja vu? We're going to go back to Tyler Higbee. You talked about his targets and his chance to torch the Colts and one target. For the second straight week, though, Stafford was very efficient. We've talked about that. Throwing 30 or less passes. And again, Cooper Kupp went off. I think this week, this game versus the Bucs is going to be a shootout again, potentially played without their starting running back, which that's the big deal. Like, I'm going to tell you, if Henderson plays, I'd probably stay away from Higbee. If Henderson doesn't play, I'm putting Higbee in. Like, I would not be afraid at all to play Higbee and Hockenson, Higbee and Kelce, Higbee and Waller, however you want to do it. I would go with two tight ends. He's just, again, he's going to come through. He still ran a ton of passing routes last week. It's just when Cooper Kupp's getting 30 yards, you know, every time he catches the ball, and you also got Robert Woods, and we just thought that Stafford was going to be slinging it, and he's not having to. I think this is the first game that we could see that. And then, oh, by the way, the Bucs really struggle. In the two games, they've given up 16 receptions for 144 yards and zero touchdowns. And on those 16 receptions, 17 targets. So throwing to tight ends has been very effective. The Cowboys tight ends aren't special. I mean, Pitts had a good game, not a great game. It's there for you. I like Higbee a lot at 4,100.
Yeah. Now, Higbee is our Logan Thomas this year.
Yep.
We're just going to keep going at him until he comes through because I think in the long run, he's a top 10 tight end.
By the end of the year,
he's finishing in the top 10. We can't
quit playing over Hockenson. Yeah.
So my mid tier is a borderline mid tier, but I wanted him in here. It's Kyle Pitts at 4,900 against my New York Giants.
Again, don't you think this is a flex tight end play? Like, if you're going to play him, either put him in at your tight end and, you know, have another tight end at flex or whatever, because at 4,900, again, look at those guys at receiver and running back.
Right. Like, you're kind of rolling the dice at anyone who's under 5,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I would keep in mind he's probably been a little disappointing for people.
Mm-mm.
If you prorated these two games to, we'll stick with the 16 game thing. I'm not going to like figure
he's
out.
He's disappointed. You're a moron.
But yeah, he'd be on pace for 72 catches for 832 yards.
Thank you, Joe.
If you listened to our preseason pod, I basically told people the reason why you should take someone like Hockenson over Pitts is because 70 receptions for 800 yards is really good for a rookie tight end. So that's why I told people that. Hopefully they listened. But he's trending in the right direction too, though. He's had at least 6 targets both games. He's been involved. He went from 68% of the snaps week 1 to 79% of the snaps week 2. And let's face it.
I read he had some issues with the playbook, by the way. That's part of the reason why he's slowly seeing an uptick. That makes sense.
And you'd assume that he'll get more comfortable. That number's just going to go up. And while you can argue yourself into like, hey, maybe James Bradbury does a good job against Calvin Ridley. You know, maybe Jackson does a good – maybe Gage doesn't have a great game, although our slot corner tends to be a weak spot. So maybe look at Russell Gage.
But think about Pitts, though, too. He gets moved all over.
But the problem with Pitts is who on the Giants is matching up with him? Are you going to put a corner on him? Like, they're going to be outsized entirely. Blake Martinez and Tay Crowder have zero chance of hanging with Kyle Pitts. I assume the plan is going to be – either it's going to be zone – there's probably a lot of zone. It's the Giants. But if someone is trying to stay near him in that zone, I assume it's going to be a lot of three safety. It could be Xavier McKinney. It could be Jabril Peppers. Those guys are 6'1 and 5'11. It's going to be a problem. There's no, like, this is why Kyle Pitts went fourth. He's a giant matchup problem. And then the Giants, 28th against tight ends. Only the Ravens are giving up more targets. And again, the Ravens just played Darren Waller and Travis Kelce. So the tight end is going to be a great play against the Giants probably this entire season. Kyle Pitts is a freak athlete. And again, if he goes off, this could be the low point.
I will tell you, too, hearing all that zone talk, it really makes me, again, like Cordell Patterson a lot. And Mike Davis, for that matter. Both very good pass catchers.
But like I said, you got Cordell Patterson, you got Kyle Pitts. These guys are freak athletes. And the Giants' strength
about Ridley too, right? That you got to deal with.
Yeah, and the Giants' strength is the DB. Is like everything underneath, you can toast us on. So Pitts and Patterson, yeah, I'd say put them in a bunch of your lineups.
All right, my low tier tight end, Pat Vermuth. I'm going back with Baby Gronk. He's 2,900. Second time I've used him, but there's some reason for optimism here. Because the first time I told you this was a throw shit against the wall, I expect him to have a pretty good game. Eric Ebron looks washed. I mean, I hate to say that, but that's just a fact. Pat has secured all 5 targets he's had this season. His targets and receptions jumped in week 1 from 1 to 4 in week 2. He's a much better blocker, like Gronk. That's why they're calling him Baby Gronk. So I can see him being on the floor more because, again, the Steelers' offensive line is horrible. And if he can just put up 8.5 points, which that's what he did last week, again, 2,900, you're going to be thrilled at that price. Remember, he caught multiple touchdowns from Big Roethlisberger in the preseason in the last game of the season. And this is the same Bengals D that gave up 4 receptions for 45 yards to a guy named Conklin in week 1, who I couldn't pull him out of a line if my life depended on it. I think he's the Vikings' 3rd string tight end. Pat Vermuth to me is a very interesting play against Cincy this week at 2,900.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned it last week. Like, he was a really good tight end prospect. Like, we kind of forget.
He is really big.
Because he's not quite the freak guy, obviously. That's why Kyle Pitts went fourth. He was, you know, he's not a
hot. Remember Gronk when he came out? There wasn't a lot of fuss and, you know, about Gronk.
I will say, as someone who went to the University of Arizona,
oh, here we go.
The reason for that is because he missed the entire season.
No, I know he's hurt. Yeah.
Why didn't you call
the Giants and tell them to draft him, Joe? Come on, use your inside information.
I should have been like just protesting outside from the draft Gronk. If he played, he would have been a first rounder. I'll tell you. And U of A would have gone to a Rose Bowl, but that's a whole other story. Let's not get on that. But yeah, Pat Vermuth, he would have been the number one tight end drafted a year ago, which was a weak class, but he would have been by far like Cole Kmet, Adam Troutman, he's easily better than those guys as just an overall tight end. My lower tier is Jared Cook at 3,900.
I love
this one's pretty simple. Again, this game's going to be a shootout. They're going to have to pass. He's seen at least five targets in both games. Mm-hmm. And the Chiefs are giving up the second most yards to tight ends. Again, you can probably guess who's first or dead last. The Ravens, who have a really good excuse. Chiefs defense is just bad. They're bad against tight ends. Give me Jared Cook.
All right. Give you three flexes real quick and then three defenses get out of because I know we've gone a little long. I was going to go with Keenan Allen. I got all my notes for Keenan Allen. I'm swapping it, okay? I'm going Mike Williams, 6,400.
All right.
It's $200 cheaper. And me and Corey had a conversation today. We do a kind of a big lineup that we split each week, and we make the lineup together. And he made the point. Mike Williams is seeing the exact same amount of targets that Keenan Allen is. This is 2 weeks in a row. And that was the reason I always loved Keenan Allen, was the fact that he's a target monster. Well, now Mike Williams is receiving the same amount. What's the difference in Keenan Allen and Mike Williams? Mike Williams can just take any play at any time to the house. He is more made for Justin Herbert. That was a great point by Corey. He's this big, physical, you know, fast receiver. You know, you can throw the ball down the field to him. I love Keenan Allen, but I'm going to go and tell you that I am moving that to Mike Williams because he's looked amazing. And he's just, again, he is $6,400. And this is, again, where if you want to go Herbert, Williams, Allen, it's not that outrageously expensive. You can do it for under 20K. And if you really believe this Kansas City game is going to be the shootout that we do, I mean, the guys have gotten both 11 targets at least in both games. So there is potential for not one of them, but both of them to go off. So Mike Williams or Keenan Allen if you want to do it, but I'm going to make Mike Williams my official one at 6,400. The second one might get some eyebrows raised, but it's OBJ, 5,300. Full discretion, this was going to be Marquise Brown, but Brown has not practiced this week. He's questionable. I love Brown this week. I don't want to say that, but with Higgins being questionable, I did not want to give you guys, and I know technically OBJ is questionable too, but two practices in a row, I can't believe he's not going to play, especially with Landry out. I just didn't want to give you guys two guys that are, you know, could end up not playing. And OBJ, he practiced fully Wednesday, he practiced fully today. With Landry out at least three games, they need a legit number one, like now more than ever, especially playing a Bears team that under Andy Dalton, you probably weren't concerned about having to score a lot of points, right? But with Fields, there is potential that the Bears offense could end up being very frisky and very different from what the team looked like the first 2 weeks. Before his injury last year, OBJ had a four-game stretch where he averaged seven targets per game, 4.5 receptions, 3 touchdowns. He ended 2019, I know it was a turn ago, but he ended 2019 catching a touchdown low his last two games. Let's not forget that this guy was a touchdown machine in New York before he moved to Cleveland. He's had injuries, all other stuff. And I just really believe that Baker is going to make a concerted effort to make sure that OBJ is welcome back, because he is honestly the kind of piece that can turn a very good team that we saw go toe-to-toe with Kansas City week one into a legit Super Bowl contender. Because with the way Baker's been playing, Jarvis Landry comes back, if OBJ is even 90% of what he was at his peak, this Browns team is all of a sudden very dangerous with Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb. And then, oh, by the way, the Bears secondary sucks. Burrow with three turnovers and three quarters – and through three quarters, he had 22 attempts for 127 yards. In the fourth quarter, he threw touchdowns, plural, and almost led them back to a victory. He threw for as many yards in the fourth quarter as he did in the first three, and their offensive line was awful. The Browns have one of the best offensive lines in football. Baker is not going to be under duress the way that he was. And week one, the Bears secondary was shredded by the Rams receivers. Do not forget that. Absolutely shredded. I believe in OBJ, and yes, I know that sounds crazy. So OBJ or Marquise Brown. And then my low play is probably, he's going to be in most of my lineups, honestly, especially because I'm going to, now I've talked myself into these, either the Chargers with two Chargers and Herbert. Marvin Jones Jr. is 4,900 versus Arizona. We constantly talk about bargain volume guys, right? Guys who are going to get a ton of targets, have the potential to put up big games, and they're at a low close cost. You know, it's the perfect storm, right? He's probably got a very high floor, but he also has the potential for a huge ceiling, especially this guy. Enter Marvin Jones, who now without Kenny Golladay and TJ Hockenson on his roster anymore, he looks like a legit number one receiver. He has 20 targets in his two games, 11 receptions, and two touchdowns. What's really enticing is he is known for his big plays. Thus far, he's only had two receptions over 20 yards. So he's doing all this damage and feasting in fantasy, and he has not yet done what he did in Detroit regularly. Trevor Lawrence absolutely has the arm to turn him into the deep down the field threat that we know he can be. And again, you got to remember that Lawrence is a true rookie. There's going to be growing pains, but the talent is there. But more importantly, they suck. So they're going to be down and they're going to be throwing a lot. And Jones did this in Detroit last year all the time, where he'd have like 4 points at the half and you'd be cussing, God, why'd I put Marvin Jones in his lineup? And next thing you look up and you have 25 points. And again, they're facing a Cardinals D that gave up five or more receptions to three receivers last week, and all three scored a touchdown. He's due for a breakout game, even though, again, he's averaging like 17 points a game. And I'm calling it here, even if it happens in garbage time.
Yeah, I'm all in on this Marvin Jones pick as well. I think he looks like, at least for the early part of the season, he seems like he's the number one guy in that offense. And like I said, they're going to be losing every single game. They got their asses basically handed to them by the Houston Texans. They're going to be losing every
game.
James
Robinson, right? Like, James Robinson looked incredible last year. And I don't know what happened. Like, he just – I don't know how your line gets that much worse.
It's really bad. And they franchised one of their tackles, too, which was a choice. I can't say I'm a big fan of Jaguars coaching or management right now.
Yeah, Jaguars. All right, let's go through these defenses. We'll get out of here, Joe.
All right, so I think this week's keep it simple here. If you're high end, it's Denver against the rookie QB who just threw five picks. It's $4,300. It's a lot of money.
Not really, though. Usually, for a matchup, it's not outrageous.
I mean, they scored 8 points against the Giants, 9 points against the Jags. They've only given up 13 points in either game. And the Giants scored at, I believe, is literally the last play of week one. So this defense, they don't give up anything.
Patrick Surtain is for real. And he's play week one.
Fantastic. They only have three sacks. I just kind of feel like they're due for a big sack game.
You got Von Miller and Bradley Chubb. That's going to change.
So I think Chubb is hurt, though. I believe he's out for a bit. But regardless, that they're going to give you points. It's just a question of, like, is it 8 points or is it 15 points? If you go down a little bit, hey, who else is facing a rookie making his first start? It's the Cleveland Browns, 3,200 against Justin Fields. This Browns defense is obviously not at the level of the Denver Broncos. But they played Kansas City week one. Houston, like I said, there's a reason I like Justin Fields as a play this week. They didn't look good against Tyrod Taylor. But Tyrod Taylor is also an experienced QB. He knows what he's looking at in coverages. And then you've got Myles Garrett, Jadeveon Clowney against a really bad Chicago Bears line.
That defense is really good.
Like, there's a chance Fields puts up points for you. Like, Fields could put up like 20 points.
I could see him rushing for 100 yards and not scoring a touchdown.
And then the Browns could give you like 15 because they picked him off twice and scored a touchdown. Like, I don't even think these things contradict each other. Going down even cheaper, you mentioned this one to me.
Okay, it's I was going to say, if you didn't include it, I was going to get on to you because I think it's such a great play.
Again, rookie QBs, Arizona against the Jacksonville Jaguars. I don't know where Arizona's pass rush went last week against a Minnesota line that I think is a little sketchy, but they had six sacks against the Tennessee Titans week one.
Well, Chandler Jones had like five of them.
Yeah, you got Chandler Jones. J.J. Watt hasn't had a big game yet. That'll happen at some point this season. Decent chance it's going to be against the Jags. Like you said, their line looks atrocious. Obviously, I'd be shocked if we don't see multiple turnovers in this game. That might be my favorite play of the week. I'm going to give you two more real quick, though, and it's from the same game, and that's Pittsburgh and the Bengals. Actually, no, screw it. I don't want Pittsburgh. Give me the Bengals at fucking 2,100. I love it. They only give up 3 yards per carry so far this year on the ground. They're going to put this game on Ben Roethlisberger, and Ben Roethlisberger is washed. He is awful. I'll be surprised if he does not throw a pick in this game. And you can get the Bengals for 2,100. They've put up 5 and 6 points. That's not awesome, but that's at 2,100. If you give me 6 points, shit, I'll take it every time. And actually, one more I do want to throw out there. It does not look like Carson Wentz will play. Monitor that.
You're missing.
But if it's Jacob Eason, I've said, I think on this podcast and on the one with Allen, Titans defense is straight trash. I think they're awful. If they're facing Jacob Eason, they're not a bad play at 2,400.
I think Jacob Eason against that is a intriguing play, and I love Michael Pittman if Eason plays, even more than I do if Wentz plays.
Michael Pittman is a good guy to watch because as long as he gets remotely okay quarterback play, I think he puts up points against the Titans. But my favorites are probably, though, obviously, if you have the money, get the Broncos, but love the Cardinals against the Jags. And if you want to just save a bunch of money, I don't believe in Ben Roethlisberger. I think the Bengals can keep Najee from going wild. So at 2,100, I think they're going to give you some points.
I think you missed one.
Ooh, I missed one? Hit me.
The Raiders versus the Dolphins without Tua. The Raiders defense has actually looked pretty good. And they're at home. I think the Raiders are going to feast. I love that. Jacoby Brissett is Jacoby Brissett. He's like a step below Tyrod Taylor. Like, he's not a terrible quarterback, but he's not great. Let's be honest. The Dolphins offense looks like trash. And I don't think it's just Tua. I don't think it's just Tua.
No, I really do
like the Raiders a lot this week at 3,400.
The only reason I didn't really like feel the Raiders here, because I picked up the Raiders in one of my leagues because I was like, I need a defense because the Giants are trash. But I just think I like the Cardinals a little more at the 400 less.
Oh, no, I love Cardinals. The Cardinals are my play. They're in 400 my 500.
But if for whatever reason you're like, you know what, I think the Jags put up some points, I think he starts to figure it out.
I don't know if it's going to make a difference if the Raiders get a big lead with the Dolphins. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if they have the ability like the Jaguars do.
What are the Dolphins going to do?
Exactly. Yeah.
So Raiders also a very solid play.
All right. So we're going to get out of here. I apologize if this was a little long, but I did the defense rant at the beginning. There was supposed to be an Allen rant, which I may try to do that in production. He came on, basically told everybody to bring their bitch ass this Sunday to the Ivy Sports DraftKings entry, and he's going to whoop your ass. That's what he said. And then, of course,
he beat him, basically.
Fucking Zoom cut out on us, so we didn't get it through. But for me and Joe for the Weekly Daily Fantasy Football Podcast, we enjoy doing this. I love to see the success. Again, if you end up having a lineup that does well with our picks, please let us know because I want to give you a shout-out on next week's podcast. And again, the big thing is Ivy Sports Podcast Network doing a lot of great stuff. Joe and Allen got a great podcast coming out on Tuesday where they recap the NFL games. You got a Minute Fan podcast. Allen's back doing the backdoor cover, covering the NFL gambling lines. We got the Team Turnbuckle Wrestling podcast with me, yeah. Sam, Ron L. But this is the only podcast you can win money by listening to. Don't forget that. For Keith Fleming and Joe Matz, this has been the latest edition of the Weekly Daily Fantasy Football Podcast on the IB Sports Podcast Network. I hope all your lineups have nothing but fire next to the guys in them. See you.